触れる魚とネオンのサム透明な音と汚れた音符
Panoply, Panorama, Panpipe, Pansy, Aha, Pansexual, Knowing No Boundaries of Sex or Gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope. Only on 3CR 855 AM digital and 3cr.org.au.
3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally. First broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Kulin Nations at the overlap of the contested lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong peoples. And we pay respects to elders past, present and emerging. Hello to any Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, First Nations people tuning in today. And we acknowledge that all the lands were stolen and never ceded. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Sally Goldner. I'm your host for the show. I use the pronouns she and her. There's lots of ways to get in touch with the show on what could be, I'm going to go directly to it, a slightly emotional topic, and there will be another one later in the show. So I'm going to give those content warning numbers for QLife, including Switchboard, 1800 184 527 and Rainbow Door, 1800 729 367. However, if you want to get in touch with the show, the ways to do it are outofthepan855@gmail.com, SMS 61456751215, Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Sal Gold Said So, and that's the bottom line. Posts on Facebook, my page, Sally Goldner, and Out of the Pan, 3CR, 855am Melbourne. Postal address, PO Box 1277, Collingwood 3066. Any opinions I express on the show are strictly my own. And we have to thank the crew from Out of the Blue, diving deep for the marine news, as they do every Sunday morning from 11.30 till noon. And have to say, yesterday I went out, left home at about 11.30 to go out and do a few things, and I didn't need parka, beanies, gloves or scarf. Oh, the warmth, the joy. I think there's about 6 million Victorians who are fed up with winter. I'm probably one of them. The crew from Out of the Blue would only have to wear the moderate wetsuit, I think, if they went diving deep, literally, this afternoon. And on the show today, I have a wonderful guest waiting on the line because I was, struck but not surprised, I suppose, to get an email from the fabulous people at the Economic Media Centre about a Commonwealth Ombudsman's report into serious failures in the administration of income support in Australia, whereby government agencies unlawfully cancel payments for 964 individuals and job seekers continued to receive automated cancellations even after the system was supposed to be paused. And there's still suspensions going on this flawed and punitive compliance system. And I decided that's something we need to talk about. We know queer and perhaps even particularly transgender, diverse, non-binary people have something to do with that. And thanks to Jingwa Kwan, who's been a long-time associate of 3CR, I have on the line Avery Howard, who is president of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, who's going to speak to their own experience and wider systemic issues. Avery, welcome to Out of the Pan. Oh, I think we've had a dropout. It's one of those technical hitch days. Hang on. Try that again. Avery, welcome to Out of the Pan. No, it's not happening. Oh, hang on. Third time lucky. Avery, welcome to Out of the Pan.
Hi there. Can you hear me now?
I've got it. Me not pressing buttons hard enough. Me, my fickle fingers were not fickle enough. I'll just keep breathing. Welcome to Out of the Pan. If it's okay to ask, I'll start by asking which pronouns you use, if any, and which Aboriginal lands you happen to be on at this time.
I use they, them pronouns, and I am currently on the land of the Cabrigal people of the Darug Nation.
Welcome, welcome to listeners of on whichever land they are on. Avery, there's so much to talk about. I want to talk about, you know, you've experienced I'll try to be neutral and journalistically objective, the challenges of income support systems. You're involved with the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. There's this report that talks to the sort of experiences you've had and many others have had. It's difficult to know where to start. I mean, I might start just by, because maybe not all of the Out of the Pan listeners know about the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. That might be a good place to start. Tell us a little about the union and what it does.
Yeah, so we're an organization dedicated to helping people struggling with the income support system and through mutual obligations and employment service providers, where our kind of goal is to help those who are unemployed, underemployed, or in unpaid work to help navigate the system. So we have at times run a hotline, which we're hoping to get back up soon. And we have advocacy services either through our social media pages or through email.
Okay, then. I imagine, maybe I can't imagine. I can imagine what you do, but I can't imagine sort of how much you might a service like this is needed, because these systems are often incredibly difficult to navigate. And when you consider that people navigating them might have issues of, say, mental health and other disabilities, neurodivergence, and beyond my lived expertise, people, let's say, who have a first language other than English, newly arrived, similar. I imagine, sadly, you must be swamped with the need for your support at times.
Definitely. I know we had to, unfortunately, pause our hotline toward the end of last year just because we didn't have the capacity to keep staffing it. But also because there was a new kind of complaints process brought up within the Department of... I think it's the Department of Employment and Workplace Relations. I think that's the name of it. They change names so often. I can't always be 100% on top of the names of the department. But there was a new complaints process brought in. And so we decided at that point in time it was best to pause the hotline. But we are slowly bringing that capacity back up, and we should have the hotline up sooner rather than later.
Fair enough. And, so you're not able to offer services in the meantime, or are you doing them via other means, or?
Yeah, so mostly just through our social media pages and through email. So people can contact us if they need assistance at advocacy@auwu.org.au or through any of our social media pages. We have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, as far as I know. I think we have accounts on other pages, but those are the ones that we're active on.
Fair enough. Yep. Well, look, I'll make sure, perhaps I get those off you and put at least one of put them into posts after the program. I'm going to do the podcast about that across the various platforms. So I'll have to try to get those off you just to get them all, or to hit the search engine or something, because obviously very much needed. And that means, you know, your services are obviously very much needed in light of this Commonwealth Ombudsman's report. And I have to admit, I've tried to read the 78-page report and found it hard going. Perhaps start with an overview and then drill into some of the detail and specific findings of this Commonwealth Ombudsman's support that found that 964 income support payments were unlawfully cancelled. Let's start with an overview and then, as I say, some detail.
Yeah, so I'll admit to you, I have also tried reading the report. I haven't gotten through all of it, but I do have some knowledge of it. In regards to those 964 cancellations, there was a legislation change in 2022, which required an outlook of the job seeker's circumstances when cancelling payments. However, they were those 964 job seekers had their payments automatically cancelled without their circumstances being looked into between 2022 and when the secretary, I believe, paused cancellations back in 2024. There were also, I think, a further 45 people who received automatic suspensions of their payments, automatic cancellations of their payments after it had been announced by the secretary that they were pausing those cancellations at the time.
Okay, then. So it actually does, sadly, hit the 1,000 mark, which is, you know, pretty woeful. This is obviously I'll say, an emotive topic, I might ask for some of the circumstances that are mentioned in the report and the effects that they had on it. But also I want to hear then, that would probably be a nice lead-in into your personal experience as well, particularly as a, you know, a queer person. So, you know, sort of from what, on your reading thus far, what sort of things, what sort of consequences have come out?
I mean, so I guess consequences of kind of those, as we now know, unlawful cancellations, there were, as far as I read, there were people who were in kind of worse mental health outcomes,
mm-hmm.
because obviously with, when you stop receiving a payment, and it may be your only source of income,
of course,
then that can be incredibly brutalizing. And kind of the overall demoralization within the system. Sorry, I'm just...
No, that's all right.
My brain is blanking at the moment. If you just give me 1 second, sorry.
It's okay. Talking with Avery Howard, President of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, about the... sent the Commonwealth Ombuds report into unlawful cancellations, and the what I should have said was the likely negative consequences, but just wanting to get detail on them. And here we go.
Sorry, there was also what's called a digital protections framework, which was also introduced in the 2022 amendments, that it appears that the DEWR, or the Department of Employment and Workplace Relations, did not put in place, which basically means that if there wasn't a framework that allowed people who were interacting with mutual obligations and employment services digitally to receive kind of that, like, fair treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was I'm trying hard not to be sarcastic, but gee, the power of the system was stacked against the individual, really. It's just terrific that's the case. People who are just battling through no fault of their own, probably, and then have to face a system that comes across and probably is so stacked against them. It must be incredibly, it's obviously just incredibly difficult.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know through, I guess, my personal experiences, but through experiences I've heard from others and from the report, it, like, the whole system, I believe, is just used to kind of demoralize and brutalize and used as punishment rather than the whole, like, safety net and the assistance that it's supposed to be.
Yeah, look, absolutely. There was an article in a mainstream media outlet yesterday saying we need a universal basic income, which I think would receive a lot of support and be far easier to administer for all, both the system providers and the individuals, than this sort of punitive, complicated bureaucracy that just seems to penalise people and treat someone who's unfortunate enough, or in a lot of cases, to be on an income support, treats them like some sort of, well, in inverted commas, criminal dole blood, just sort of person, when it's just, 99% of people probably try to do the right thing and the best they can and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one thing that we know about the system is that it is currently incredibly expensive to means test, but also to be administering and giving payments to for-profit employment providers, when we have all of this information, not just in this country, but across the world, to show that there is a kinder way to do things, but it is also, most of the time, a cheaper way to do things. And that it just seems like the systems are designed in the way that they are specifically to brutalize people rather than for any kind of, I guess, economic benefit.
Yeah, and social benefit as well. Excuse me. And the thing is, of course, the more disadvantage a person faces, though, and less privilege, the harder it is it's going to navigate. And Out of the Pan is a show, as we like to say, covering pansexual issues, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. And I really wanted to, link that into your experiences as a queer person. What sort of things, have gone wrong for you, and how has that, affected you? If it's, you said it was okay to ask, but I will ask if it's okay to for anything you want to talk about there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go a little bit into my experiences of employment providers for quite a few years. So I'll be upfront because I've been I've said this many times. I became homeless at the age of 15.
Wow.
And so I started receiving youth allowance from basically my 16th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, unfortunately, a pretty long history of being on income support payments and dealing with employment services. I have always kind of known that I'm queer.
Yep.
And so all of my experiences with these providers have been through that lens. However, I think it's only been in the last few years that I've actually kind of presented more queer, if that makes sense. I've tried to be a bit more kind of adventurous in the way that I present myself. But in regards to that, I have always felt that I've needed to be more conservative when I've been attending my appointments because of judgment, but also I have heard, I've been given feedback from providers that is because of my piercings or my hair or just not just the color of my hair, but the fact that I have long hair as a masculine presenting person, that is quote unquote unprofessional.
Oh.
And that could be the reason why I'm still on payment. And we know that trans and gender diverse people are more likely to be on payments because of many factors in our lives. But specifically the way that these providers can end up brutalizing us.
Yeah.
For example, I recently, only maybe a month or two ago, received a message saying that my payment was being suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Because I supposedly hadn't filled in enough job applications.
Yeah.
But it turns out that my consultant at my job provider just didn't scroll down on the document that she was reading that had the rest of the job applications on there. And, whilst that isn't necessarily something that relates to my experience of being queer in that, those experiences are faced by basically everybody in the system. And when you have a system and have a society that's already targeted at brutalizing you with everything that's happening, it's just another thing that kind of brings us down.
Yeah. Well, no matter how early we realize we're queer, face it, as you say, a society that, is often, and I'm being generous here, significantly against us, some might say very hugely. And, then you've got these obstacles. I mean, and, what those, that feedback about the colour and length of your hair is blatant discrimination under federal anti-discrimination law and a range of Victorian state law attributes. And yet that's somehow justifiable when you are applying for these jobs. You're trying to do the right thing and get that job that you would like to try to do the right thing. It just seems utterly ludicrous, that there is these extra limitations. And if I can ask, you've actually answered it. You've said that it just makes you feel more brutalised, and then you've got to try and, try to either lift yourself or get friends to give you a, the proverbial pull you up a bit to get rolling again. It just seems it can be like a proverbial vicious cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I unfortunately don't have that much support from my family. I do have some, which I feel very lucky for, but most of my family kind of live interstate or live far away, so I don't have that immediate support from them. But I think the very unfortunate thing is that in most of the sense of it, I've gotten used to a lot of the comments that have been made towards me about like my appearance and my hair and all of that. It like living in the society as it is right now, you kind of need to be somewhat resilient, in quotation marks.
Yes, indeed.
Against these comments, because like if I let all of them get to me, then I don't know how I would function, honestly. And from a lot of it, I feel like it's coming from people who don't know anything about the experiences that I have. And so a lot of it's misinformed. And so I basically go, they're commenting on something they don't know.
Yep.
Why should I listen if they don't know what it is like?
No, look, absolutely so. I mean, I think that, people who haven't experienced the income support systems of various sorts, Centrelink, job network providers, and going to ballparks next door, WorkCover, NDIA, and the bureaucracy and the hurdles that are put in front of you, the indifference, the dirty tactics like ringing you at 4:45 on a Friday to tell you something or emailing you at 4:45 on a Friday, which is what the nasty element of sort of corporate lawyers type of do. It's just woeful. So it is very, very devastating. I'll ask two questions that come to mind. So you've got those supports that keep you going. What else sort of helps you keep going? And I totally agree with you on having big, very big 96 font inverted commas about resilient. I could do three shows about how that word's been misused so often. But what helps you bounce back and try to keep moving forward?
I will say a lot of the work that I do with the union does really help. And that's because I see the passion that our members and everyone else has in regards to what we're fighting for, in regards to both the abolishment of mutual obligations, but also like raising the rate of income support and all of that. But also, I like to just sit in bed and read. I play video games. I'm a big proponent of just relaxing and having something to just unwind and have something to take my mind off of everything else that's happening in the world.
Yeah, no, fair enough. We have to have some, sort of pressure valve release to do that if we're involved in, well, things like social justice, environmental justice, that sort of, and similar work. Otherwise, it can be very, very overloading. The other question, look, which has come to me a bit out of left field, but I'd like to ask, if you were to be employed, I'll ask, what is it you would like to do? And I'm going to say where/how would you like to do it? Because I think that's something that often gets overlooked. We have AI things that feed a few skills into a resume and maybe come up with a match, although that's doubtful. But the how is just as important for people who might be facing disadvantage. So, what, where, how, similar would you like to be doing in terms of paid employment?
Well, I think what's a little bit funny is that I am actually currently in paid employment. I currently work in retail, of which it's a job that I actually really enjoy because I get to interact with people. And I find it's a more enjoyable form of retail. I work in like games and entertainment. Kind of my personal love of things like board games and trading cards, but also like video games, really helps me in the job that I'm in right now.
Cool.
I don't necessarily see it as a rest of my life career, but it's something that I am really enjoying at the moment in terms of paid employment. I think ultimately I have kind of gone back and forth with myself about what I want to do long term, but I want to be a teacher, specifically a maths teacher. I know maths is something that I really enjoy,
yep.
and it's something that I really get very easily, and I want to share that because I had some really good experiences in school with some really good teachers, and I want to kind of, in a way, pay that forward and be a kind of a good maths teacher to the incoming generations.
I like it. Sounds a bit cheesy, but honestly, a warm feeling went through me as you were talking about both the retail gig and the teacher and why, all of that stuff. I just genuinely hope that you get there, because yes, we need passionate teachers, as I believe most overwhelming majority of teachers are. But, that's an extra reason. So I just genuinely hope that you can achieve that goal at some point. That would be, like, awesome.
Thank you.
The thing that I should mention before we go, two questions coming back to the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. Who is eligible to be a member, and how do they, well, for lack of a better word, become a member. I was going to use join, but that doesn't sound quite right. And that would be the first question. So I might just ask that because I think that's important.
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, the Australian Unemployed Workers Union is open to anybody who's unemployed, underemployed, or in unpaid work.
Right.
Specifically, if you're on an income support payment, or even if you aren't, we are accepting membership from anyone. We do also accept people, like memberships from people who are in, say, full-time work,
yep.
As like solidarity members. So we don't restrict people from joining the union, just because they're in paid work. We accept everybody if they're passionate about the same things that we are.
Cool. Yep. That's what I was going to ask. And by income support, does that cover things, say, like, which are not necessarily the federal government system that was the focus of this report, but also things like, say, work cover, other things?
So our main focus is in regards to Centrelink payments.
Yep.
So things like job seeker, the disability support, pension, carers, and so on. But we won't ever, like, dissuade somebody from reaching out if just because they're not on one of those payments and they're on something else. So if there's a way that we'd be able to help somebody, then absolutely they can get in touch.
Cool. No, look, I think you do an amazing job, massively, probably under-resourced and not able to meet demand, as you've said, but I hope that the line can get reopened soon and hopefully someone will be able to support you in doing that. Avery, is there anything else you want to add about the Unemployed Workers Union, the report, or your experiences before I let you have a breather on this Sunday afternoon?
I guess all I will say, I just want to plug Breadline, which is another program here on 3CR, run by some of our members, which runs 6 to 6:30 on Monday night.
Cool.
It's a really good radio show because it goes into a lot more about what's happening within the employment services system and with income support and all of that. And it's something that we're really happy to be supporting.
Yeah. No, look, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. That's... well, sort of 3CR intersecting at its best. So very, very good. I was going to say when we started, you're obviously familiar with 3CR. Funny about that. but seriously, that's what 3CR is doing. And I think the fact that you've come onto this program as a queer person, highlights that crossover really, really well. And anything else that perhaps we... need to cover, but I think we've got it. But I'll do a last call, as they say.
I don't think I've got anything else I need to say. I guess people can follow us on our social medias. I think Oz Unemployment or Oz Unemployed, depending on where you're looking. Otherwise, you can contact us on our website at auw.org.au. Or if you need advocacy help, you can contact us at advocacy@auw.org.au.
Cool. There's all the modern means of communication. I'll get at least one of those into the podcast link so people can have that in front of them as well. Avery, thanks for your time on Sunday. Wishing you, the union, all the best, and keep up the amazing efforts you do in the fight for a fairer and more just system for those needing it.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Bye now.
Bye.
Avery Howard, the president of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, talking about experiences with Centrelink and the JobSeeker systems, the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, and the damning Commonwealth Ombudsman's report, which, as I say, I'm finding hard going, but to read all 70-plus pages of it, it's just, I don't know, where's the sense of natural justice in the world? Well, I think that's a good lead into a track, one of two similar ones that I'm going to play today. I should have added that we opened up, before I go to the next track, the opening track today was Red Gum from way back in around 1979-80 from Virgin Ground, The Money's No Good. And part of me, it's a case of the more things change, the more they stay the same, that track was first put out over 45 years ago, and we're kind of still talking about the same issues, just the technology's different. But unaffirming what we've just talked about, let's have a listen to a track from Totally Gorgeous and their version of the classic speech by Martin Luther King, someone whose spirit and actions we need more than ever today, I Have a Dream. 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
To make real the promises of democracy, now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice.
Now is the time
to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood.
Now is the time
to make justice a reality for all God's children.
Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests degenerate into physical violence.
Again and again,
we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force.
I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution, staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering.
Dream today.
girls, as sisters and brothers, I have a dream today. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. If America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring.
Let freedom ring.
From the bridges of hilltops in New Hampshire. Let freedom ring.
Let freedom ring.
From the mighty mountains of New York.
Let freedom ring. From the hiding alligators of Pennsylvania.
Let freedom ring.
Let freedom ring. From the snow-capped rockies of Colorado.
Let freedom ring.
From the curvaceous slopes of California.
But not only that.
Let freedom ring. From Stone.
Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring.
Three CR 855 AM, Three CR Digital. Sorry, 3cr.org.au, 3CR on demand, out of the pan with Sally. First broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. We just heard from the wonderful Totally Gorgeous, and we'll have a track from people in that band as our next music track. That one was from their 2020 release, which was Gored in the Act, G-O-R-U-D, and I Have a Dream. And yes, we need Martin Luther King's dreams, as I say, far more than ever we did before. Catching up on messages that have come in, Roving Reporter has come in with a message on Joe Gersh, who is a Melbourne businessman who's come out as gay very much later in life and is now 70. You know, I think there's certainly issues of people coming out later, whether it's in their queer commute, whether it's being queer or, well, you know, this is something that's, I suppose, touching my heart at the moment. That's finding out, well, in my 60th year of living, that I'm on the autism and ADHD kaleidoscopes and trying to live Aurelic and neurotypical and similar, and having to try to, without knowing, trying to assimilate all my life. And it's certainly issues that I think need addressing, Roving. I don't think there's enough. Yes, it's important that we talk about queer youth, and of course it's Wear It Purple Day on the last Friday of this month of August, this time the 29th. So we should talk about these things, but, you know, certainly we need to do things about, I think there needs to be more targeted stuff. You know, you've mentioned that you don't necessarily agree with all of his politics or worldview, but when wealthy men come out in business circles, it may encourage more AFL executives and blokey men to accept AFL players coming out, gay players coming out in the AFL too. Yes, still no, to my knowledge, past or present, gay or bisexual men who are out in AFL. We had, now I've got to get my Roberts right, Ian Roberts come out in rugby league many years ago. We've had rugby union and round ball players come out. Josh Cavallero, who unfortunately faces homophobia, which is not good, online and that sort of thing. But we certainly need them in AFL. And you've also asked which politicians we can lobby to change the punitive system. I will get onto that in the next track and tell you who is the Federal Minister for Social Services type of stuff and go from there. All right. Now, sort of, running short on time today, and there's an article that I desperately wanted to cover. I think I might get started on it now. This first came online yesterday. It's in today's Sunday Age on page 17, where unbelievably funding for gender surgery needs more information, according to a federal government agency. Excuse me while I have to take a lot of deep breaths trying to get through this article. It's good to see, first of all, the Australian Society of Plastic Surgeons has said that there definitely needs to be a need for surgical funding, and also the Royal Australian College of Surgeons and the Australian Medical Association. And I'm pretty sure about 99.44% of trans people would say there should be funding for surgeries yesterday. And the surgeries would include operations to remove breasts, reconstruct chests, genitals, faces and voices, and there were 75% coverage by the medical benefits scheme. Well, why not 100%? But that'd be too much to ask, wouldn't it? But however, this government committee, the Medical Services Advisory Committee, said the application was not yet strong enough to approve funding. It called for more information on the longer term outcomes of surgery. Well, like duh, people whose bodies feel so dysphoric from who their sense of self is will have their lives saved. Do you need any more stories about that? And claimed that the systematic review did not take a sufficiently robust literature review. Literature review? I have to be subject to a literature review if I want surgery. It considered that the identified evidence appeared to support, this is quoting MSAC as quoted in the Age article, appeared to support superior clinical outcomes in the short term, but was of the view further assessment of comparative safety and clinical effectiveness is required. Oh, for heaven's sake, we've got a 99% success rate. There's only a 1% genuine regret rate. What do you want? And then it's going to go to economic and financial analysis. Well, I'll give you some economic and financial analysis. You know, $20,000 is the current out-of-pocket cost for surgery. So you're going to fund 75% of that, $15,000. $900 a fortnight. So it's going to repay itself within around 5 years and get people off unemployment benefits. In the meantime, they'll be paying taxes instead. So it's probably less than 5 years. Jesus, you don't have to be, as one of the 12th man send-ups used to say, you don't have to be a rocket surgeon to work out the economic benefits. And there's no amount of economic benefit that can quantify keeping someone alive. It also wanted to see about... wanted evidence about the natural history of gender incongruence. What the hell does that mean, natural history? More information about the distress experienced by some people before and after surgery. What else do you need? About regret and detransition rates. Well, I just told them that, 1%. And the preference was for non-binary individuals in the absence of surgery. Well, it's just down to each individual, like, duh. And it just makes me wonder what sort of consultation this government committee's done with trans people that could have prevented this sort of delay. So, yes, I'm a bit, again, to quote the 12th man imitating the late, great Richie Benner, a bit pissed off about that. I'll tell you which ministers we need to lobby on this to get some bums kicked as well, because I've dug up the ministry on the online, and we'll go through which... services you need to lobby. In the meantime, I'll just have a couple of messages first whilst I look at who we have to lobby, then come back, wrap up the show, and take you out with a fun new track that I found today, that I received from members of Totally Gorgeous. 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Out of the Pan thanks Go Kindly for their sponsorship of this program. Go Kindly creates high-quality, locally made bedding, donating 50% of profits to support women and gender-diverse people experiencing housing stress. Check out gokindly.com.au and take their pillow quiz.
Hi, I'm Nate Byrne, your friendly neighbourhood weather presenter. Hoping you're having a fine day. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM.
Indeed you are. And 3CR Community Radio keeps rolling 24/7. Coming up next, Freedom of Species, who will today be looking at the history of the wool industry from a vegan perspective today. Always covering great topics, the fab crew at Freedom of Species. Rotations at 2. All the fab crew from Queering the Air at 3, more queer stuff, and Salaam Radio Show at 4. So lots of great news there. Now, to answer your questions, roving reporter, looking through the various ministers here, the most likely one for the Centrelink type of issues and the report that we discussed with Ava in the program is Tanya Plibersek, Minister for Social Services, would obviously get the proverbial Guernsey on that. But probably would Minister for Government Services, Katie Gallagher, be worth CCing in? I'd say yes. You'd also have on the trans healthcare issues, Mark Butler, Minister for Health and Ageing, would probably be worth a look in there. He's also Minister for National Disability and Insurance Scheme, so that's worth thinking about. You've got possibly Michelle Rowland as Attorney General, because if laws are being broken, that's her department. You know, very indirectly, Claire O'Neill, who's Minister for Housing and Homelessness, amongst her portfolios. You've also got, as I keep scrolling, there was one other one. Scroll. Skills and Training, Andrew Giles could be one. Minister for the NDIS is Jenny McAllister. And there is also the Assistant Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, given the this comes in, Patrick Gorman. There's quite a few. Jed Kearney is the one I was after, of course, who's Assistant Minister for Social Services. So I'd say Tanya Plibersek and Jed Kearney, who, you know, seem to be reasonably favourable to these sorts of things. But I will put a link to the ministry in the podcast so you can pick and choose. And if you want to track down all the email addresses, that's a good thinking. So good thinking, roving reporter, on that. Now, just one other thing. I did get an email from one of our awesome listeners during the week, and I haven't got time to cover this issue in detail today. Part of the issue was the, apparently Nazi-like behaviour, both in the city on Friday and then apparently in regional Victoria on Saturday, which is just obviously disgusting. But part, of course, of the wider issues in the Middle East at the moment, and I'd like to give that more time, and I'm just about out of time, so I'd better wrap up the show and make way for Freedom of Species, but I will try to get to that in a future show. I won't name the listener, you know who you are, but it is an important one, but it's also one that I feel needs some deep care and attention, is all I'm going to say. So a bit cryptic, but that that awesome listener will know what I'm talking about. All right, I'd better get out of here and make way for Freedom of Species. And the track that I wanted to play at the end of the show today has a little bit of humour in it, which never goes astray. It's a track from Mal Webb and one of the associates from Totally Gorgeous. And it just struck me as very, very funny. There's never been a Saint Kilda, which, sort of is a nice little bit of fun to end the with which to end the day. Just trying to get the full details of that. With Mal Webb and colleague. But in the meantime, as that hopefully comes up just before I have to go off air, it's Mal Webb along with technology. I'm not having a good day on that. Mal Webb is credited with this song, There's Never Been a Saint Kilda. Also, get to watch the fab video clippers with this as well on YouTube. There's Never Been a Saint Kilda. I'm going to have a Bex and a lie down. Thanks for tuning in to Out of the Pan. I'm Sally Goldner. Catch you next week.
There's never been a Saint Kilda. That suburb by the bay was named for a sailing ship named after a lady jailed on an island by her husband way to the west of Scotland. And that Saint Kilda archipelago's dodgy etymology may well involve a two-tongued tautology doubly dubbed in Gaelic and Norse. Toba Childa is where Martin saw the source. But the main island and another further afield translate as deathly westerly shepherd or shield. That's Hirta and Skilda, which led for sure to a helter-skelter of nomenclature. Through decades of maps, names morphed to swaths, spots, Kilda lost an R, but it gained a dot after the S. And thence folks must have surmised that someone called Kilda had been canonized. Beatified with the power to bewilder, but there's never been a Saint Kilda. That suburb by the bay was named for a sailing ship, named after a lady jailed on an island by her husband, way to the west of Scotland. Rachel Cheesley was 10 years old when she saw her father hanged for the murder of the judge who had settled his divorce. Thus Rachel too is highly strung, but she found a beau in James Lord Grange, and the marriage produced 9 kids. But as her looming gloom consumed her groom, the doomed union was soon on the skids. Yeah, but James was a Jacobite rebel, and Rachel had threatened to expose his sympathies. So he faked her death and had her forcibly transported westerly through the Hebrides. For 8 years she languished, she didn't speak the language, the Arctic gales they shield her. Then she was moved to Skye again to falsely die. Another 3 years mustn't have thrilled her, till her third death sadly stilled her heart. But there's never been a Saint Kilda. That suburb by the bay was named for a sailing ship named after a lady jailed on an island by her husband, way to the west of Scotland. Sir Thomas Ackland's wife was touched by Lady Grange's tragic tale. So Tom named his schooner the Lady of St. Kilda, and soon for Melbourne it set sail. And there on the northeast Port Phillip shore, it was moored for more than a year. So rather than Punktown, Green Knoll or Fareham, the foe holy handed it indelibly adhere. Indeed, on the whim of the wife of a boat builder, there's never been a Saint Kilda. That suburb by the bay was named for a sailing ship named after a lady jailed on an island by her husband, way to the west of Scotland.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.